When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
And hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I'm Brian Shackman. He's John Senecal. It's episode 176. We just got news. Blake Snell signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers.
If you're waking up this morning.
So it brings up a lot of things to discuss. I mean, the Dodgers are the evil empire now and makes the Yankees look like, I don't know, not Tampa, but it's definitely crazy. And it's crazy to think that some people think they'll still be in on Juan Soto. There's deferred money with Snell, so they continue to mortgage their future. My theory is that that just means they're going to sell the team before the chickens come home to roost. But let's just start with your thoughts on the Snell signing and what it means for the rest of the market.
Yeah, so this signing is interesting for a couple of reasons, like what you're talking about the market, but it happens quick, right? It happened quick, and it happened for a lot more AAV money than most people would think. You talk about the deferred money and the signing bonus, but when it comes down to it, it's basically what the other agents are going to be looking at and other teams will be looking at is AAV. So it basically shakes out like $36.4 million a year over, because he signed a five-year, $182 million contract, which shakes out like $36.4 million. That being said, for the rest of the market, the big names were Corbin Burns and Max Fried, were the right other two big pitchers. And they are both younger than Blake Snell, right? So Max Fried being the youngest, he'll pitch as an age 30-year-old, and Burns will pitch as a 30-year-old next season. And Snell is pitching as a 32-year-old, I believe, this coming season. Yeah. So you look at the years he got, 5 years, and you're automatically going to think that Burns and Fried would command more years and more money, you would think, right? But then again, they don't have the hardware that Snell has. Snell has the two Cy Young. Snell has finally a complete game. Snell was one of the, probably other than the two Cy Young Award winners, the most dominant pitcher in baseball the second half of the season last year.
And so that's the markers, 36. It makes me think, because Nick Pivetta turned down 20.
Right. But then Nick Martinez took 20.1.
Right. So like Pivetta is an inning eater, average pitcher for a terrible team. Now, I think he turned on the 20 because he thinks he could maybe get a similar AAV, just more guaranteed years, right? I mean, that's why you do that. But, I mean, is Pivetta going to get $25 million over 3 or 4 years?
Or is Burns and Fried going to get $40 million over
I think Fried would, yeah, I do.
But the scary thing about talking about a guy like Fried is he's been injured so much. He's been injured almost like every season.
Right.
I mean, Burns has been relatively durable.
It brings in the question, and this, I mean, we're going to be all over the place because we'll get to Soto in a second. It doesn't so much, the conversation shouldn't center so much on how much they're going to get relative to Snell. It's, say you're in the range of 25 to 40. what teams are going to pay them? And like with the Dodgers doing what they did, so like, you know, you obviously, you know, the big budget teams, you got the Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox are talking a big game, but who knows? You have the Cubs. And then after that, who's really going to spend a lot of money?
Well, the Blue Jays are always in the conversation. When you talk about a player like Burns, if he liked what he saw in Baltimore, Baltimore has nothing but money to spend. They're committed $88 million for their payroll next year.
That's insane.
They're under new ownership who said they were going to spend money, but they've also been clear that they're not looking for hitting. They're looking more for the pitching. So I would think that someone like Corbin Burns, if he had a good relationship with them, would be someone that they would be seriously looking at, as along with Max Fried. But there's also a ton of room for movement. You could sign a lot of players and stay under the $241 million.
Yeah. I mean, they basically tax. Say they're at $90 million. I mean, that's $150 million. That's five $30 million players.
That's a lot of difference makers on a team that was very good.
Yeah, and they don't even have to do that. But they you don't hear them. I know that you said they're pitching, but like if I had that kind of spare cash, I mean not spare cash, but if I had that kind of room, why wouldn't the Orioles get in with Soto?
I just don't think it's because they haven't done it historically in the last 10, 15 years. They just haven't been part of the conversation, much like other than like the Red Sox, because they let someone like Mookie Betts go, and they did sign Devers, but they still haven't really been, other than, you know, Kung Fu Panda over the years, and, you know, Yoshida, they got him, but he hasn't been a difference maker.
Yeah, a lot of their big signings don't work out. Right. Like Chris Sale was a disaster.
But if you look at like what... Going back to talking about Snell, and I think we need to talk about this more, because the Dodgers... are sitting, before Snell, they were sitting at a $229 million committed for next season.
Right.
And that shakes a little bit different each direction based on the competitive balance, which is $241 million. You start getting taxed after that. So you add Snell, and I think his hit is around like $30 million or $28 million.
So they're over
like
the
that.
Threshold.
So they're right there over the threshold. But I don't think they care. I just don't think they care, because it goes up, up, and up the more you spend. Like Cohen was... Last year, he was like at 90 or 100%. So he's paying like double for every player that he was signing after like the whole Verlander and Scherzer debacle and all that, that big spending spree he went on. Now, do you want to get that high? But the Yankees are at $224 million for next year already. And then you got the Sox sitting at $132 million. So the Sox are $110 million below that threshold right now.
Right.
So, which is why there's a big conversation revolving around Juan Soto and the Red Sox, because they have a ton of wiggle room. Because say what you want about teams spending a lot of money. The only team that has ponied up so far and has been willing to say, screw it, we'll spend what we want, are the Mets up until now and the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And until the Yankees are willing to bark with those two big dogs, I would think that they are both ahead of the Yankees right now in any sweepstakes.
Okay, I want to go 30,000 feet for a second, because Steinbrenners are a family-owned... The Yankees are a family-owned franchise.
Yeah. Well, they're partially owned by... Yeah, they did buy back the majority stake in the team, yes.
But you have, like, the Mets and the Dodgers are private equity billionaires own it.
Yep.
And I'm curious if the guidelines, the guardrails, if you will, for baseball payrolls... isn't ready for the wealth that is actually in power now, in the sense that maybe the baseball's set up with the way it works with the luxury, maybe it's actually already antiquated and maybe it doesn't work.
Right.
Because whether Steve Cohen or the people at Guggenheim,
yeah,
if they're like, it's not even a profit loss with the team. They're like, we don't care. I'm worth $5, $6, $7 billion.
Yeah, each of us. Who cares?
Who cares? So we'll just
spend
eat
what
you it. Want. Well, that's the way to game. That's the Moneyball response to it. Is just spend to win and don't even care about the P&L, the profit loss. Whereas there's 27 teams who cannot do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you look across baseball and you make a great point, Brian. Most of the teams are owned by a family.
Yep.
Or like, you know, some got a family who owns a business like the Rogers Center, or, you know, like Rogers Communications, something right. like that. And they can't compete, like you said, with a bunch of 6, 7, 8 billionaires owning a team. And you make another good point when we talk about the Dodgers. So in this latest contract, they have $62 million deferred for Blake Snell, right? And you add that to the $680 million deferred for Shohei Ohtani, right? I don't know the exact dates on the Snell contract yet as far as when it becomes due, but Ohtani starts in 10 years, which is 9 years now after this season. So think about that for a second. You take $680 million and you're owed that guaranteed now. Even if that's for the next 20 years that you've got that spread out, that's $34 million a year. You're committed to one player and he's not even going to be on your roster. You know that, right? But you make another good point about the Dodgers' ownership.
I'm just chock full of good points.
Why not? Who cares? Because you've got, if you take the team and for the next 2 or 3 years and you wind up winning 2 World Series out of the next 4 years, you can go and just sell the team. Even if you wanted to eat Otani's contract as part of the deal and spread that payments out over 30, 40 years, it's nothing.
Nothing.
You're going to sell the team for $10 billion anyways.
Right. And the managing partner of the Dodgers is worth $12 billion and Steve Cohen's worth $21 billion. And that might not even include the valuation of the teams they own. And so I think that these are all, I'm making this observation in real time. I think that it speaks to the fact that Rob Manfred can't control them. Because the guardrails that you thought would be to disincentivize, it disincentivized the Yankees, it disincentivized the Red Sox.
Yeah.
But it doesn't disincentivize the Dodgers because they're going to defer pay. They're going to end up selling the team, and they'll even, you know, with interest rates or whatever, they could probably, whatever.
How do they compete, right? The Yankees either take on investors or they just say, listen, we're the Yankees and who knows how much money they got?
What I would love to know, and I want to share with you a really funny story. What I would love to know is, I would love to actually know how much profit under the current conditions, say the Yankees have or the Dodgers. There's no way to know. We don't know because even the people at Fortune or Forbes or whatever, that's all conjecture. There's no way for them to know because the way that all these different entities are shuffled around, because that would be telling if the Yankees and have an operating cash flow of like $50-60 million in profits, then they could do a lot more. If they're like under that, then there's limitations, right?
Yeah.
And so I just wonder how much they profit. I really do. This tweet is awesome. It's Mark Gooden. I don't know much about him, but it's tongue-in-cheek. This is great. This is a tweet from Mark Gooden. My sources confirmed the following bids for Juan Soto. Red Sox, $1 million for 1 year. Mets, $700 million for 15 years. Yankees, $690 million for 15 years. Blue Jays, does it really matter? Dodgers, $1 billion for 20 years. All payments deferred until after death. I mean, it's just like, it's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's true, though, because I don't even understand why the Jays are even part of this conversation, because they basically were ready to go to the same limits that the Dodgers were with Otani, and Otani was like, I'm not going there. So why would Soto want to go there? And they're going to be losing their two best players to free agency possibly after next season with Guerrero and Bichette. So I don't think the Blue Jays are any discussion with that. But
the point here is that this person who writes, he's a national baseball writer, obviously has no respect for the Red Sox being involved either.
Yeah.
And also basically says, take your Yankee and Met money. That's not Dodger money.
Yeah, well, it's easy for your agent to get the Red Sox involved when the Yankees are involved, and they know that there's money that can be spent, and that the Red Sox have said they are supposedly willing to spend money going into free agency.
Yeah.
And you're also, obviously, the big players are going to be in on Juan Soto. And again, I still think it's going to come down to the Yankees and Mets, and it's just a matter of, like, again, what you just said. Who's going to wind up paying more money for Juan Soto? You know, and regardless of who does what, they're most likely going over. The Yankees will definitely go over the tax threshold, and the Mets at $159 million for next year, give or take with arbitration. And
you're convinced he's worth it?
You know, yes, because his age. If you can get creative with his contract, and hopefully he lets you do that, and I would think he wouldn't mind it either. If you could do like an out clause after 3 and an out clause after 6, and he's 29, and then he's 32 in those out clauses, then that gives him a ton of flexibility,
right?
And then put some interesting buyouts in those years that might work, and then some more deferred money. It's all going to come down to he wants to have the highest AAV, and Shohei does not have the highest.
He doesn't
AAV.
Want it. It's Boris who wants it.
He needs to get $50 million. That's what I'm saying. If you give him $50 million a year, he's yours. He's yours.
But and is I would he think, wor- is you is he worth
in
it?
In the current market, absolutely. Okay. If you're willing to pay $43 million a year for Max Scherzer, or $36 million a year for Garrett Cole, or $44 million a year for Aaron Judge.
Well, you put it that way.
He's definitely worth it. But that's what I'm saying. Like, we can cry. Every team can cry poverty or say how much money you got. The market always decides itself. And the market says he's worth that much money, I would think.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 176 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. A couple things to hit. The Hall of Fame, you call them nominees? Is that what you call them?
The ballot? Hall of Fame ballot for 2025.
And, you know, leading the way is...
Ichiro,
who I think he's the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, 100%, dude. Absolutely.
So I don't because he did a lot before he even got here. And then there's some really interesting names, you know.
What I don't agree about with the Ichiro thing, and we've seen that over the last, he was the trailblazer in all this, is winning the Rookie of the Year when you come into the major leagues after you've played like 8, 9, 10 right. seasons in another competitive league, and you are clearly one of their top rated players. You know, it's like Shohei coming into the league and winning. You know, it's whatever. It's a whole other story, but Ichiro is a definite lock. 10-time All-Star, 3,000 hits in the United States. He had 262 hits in 2004. Yeah. 262
Some
hits.
Of the best videos ever, too. Yeah. Like the stuff, his practice routines in the winter, and like, he's just a machine. But then you have, what do you have? Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, Joe Mauer. No, Joe Mauer's already, that's last year. That's last year.
So CeCe's the next big name on that list.
Right. So, I mean, What is he?
He's 251 wins.
Yeah.
He won a Cy Young. He's won the World Series. 3,000 Ks. Not many pitchers have done that. 6-time All-Star. I would say CeCe's a lock. He's not going to be unanimous, but he's going to get in.
I don't think he should get in first ballot.
I think so.
I love CeCe Sabathia. But
he pitched 11 seasons with the Yankees. Huge market. He won a World Series with them. He carried teams down the stretch. He always took the ball. And a lot, I mean, I hate, say what you want, personality comes into it too. Everybody loves CeCe.
They do like him.
You know, everybody loves CeCe. The next big one, in my opinion, you have Carlos Beltran, you have Felix Hernandez.
Billy Wagner.
But the interesting one is Billy Wagner. This is his last time on the ballot too. And he came 5 votes short last time in 2024.
I just don't look at him as a Hall of Famer. Like, this is where I think the baseball hall has gotten more like pro football.
422 saves, 903 innings pitched, 1,196 Ks, and... He trended up. He was a 73.8% last year, 68 the year before that, and 51 the year before that. So history says he will make it this year. If you're looking at closers across the generations of closers and the closers that have made it, Trevor Hoffman, I believe Lee Smith, Mariano, I guess you could say Eckersley too. I mean, he's partially, I guess he was main thing was a closer.
Yeah, but he won 20 as a starter, which makes him more dynamic, and he won World Series. So.
Exactly. So, but Billy Wagner, no World Series, but you know, as far as K ratio and everything, and this the guy, one of the most dominant left-handed pitchers. Yeah, and apparently, I read an article
about
him.
He's a roid guy, though, isn't he?
No, I don't think his name was ever. Anybody in that era is going to be looked at as a potential roid guy. But I read a thing about Billy Wagner was when he was younger. As like little league kid, he broke his right arm and he couldn't play baseball for a season. So he started throwing left-handed.
Get out.
And that's how he became a left-hander.
That's incredible.
And he became one of the best save closers in baseball and, you know, dominant closer in baseball. And I always thought about Billy Wagner. I'm like, this dude's 5'10" and he's just mowing dudes down.
Yeah, yeah. I like this makeup. You know, talk about size and because we're running tight on time. Pedroia. You know, obviously, he won an MVP. He won a Rookie of the Year. He won 2 rings, 14 seasons, just a shade under 300. I think there's...
He might be a guy that floats for a few years and be like a Billy Wagner fighting to get in.
I don't think... Yeah, I mean, he was a jerk to the media. That's definitely going to hurt him. There's no doubt about it that he was not fun to cover. I'll just tell you that.
But he could ball, man. And again, a lot of times you see these players, and if they dominate their league over these short amount of times, they get a lot of sympathy from the voters because they were clearly special players, but injuries clearly derailed his career.
Correct. And part of that is because of his size, because he's just undersized.
Carlos Beltran, he's going to get tagged to the whole Astros BS and all that crap. Yeah. So, I mean, he was an impact player, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Felix Hernandez threw a perfect game.
Yeah, but how could Felix Hernandez even be in the conversation?
Yeah.
He didn't have the career.
He didn't. I mean, he was on a crappy team, so a lot of times that will help
him. He's like Kerry Wood light. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't see it at all, and it bothers me that he's even
I'm going Ichiro, CeCe, Billy Wagner. Those are my picks for this year.
I think that CeCe is a Hall of Famer, but I just don't like him in year one. I know starting pitchers haven't had a lot of luck in the Hall of Fame, but I would think that for sure Ichiro, I think Billy Wagner probably. I guess if you let Wagner in, I guess you get a less CC, and CC makes the induction a lot more fun because he's just, by all accounts, when I was working in New Jersey at CNBC, his house was nearby because he lived in New Jersey.
Yeah, I think he still does.
And the reputation of him and his wife was of, and the drinking aside, like where they were very well liked. Like yeah. I guess like when they went into the hair salon and stuff like that, they tipped like crazy, yeah. And they were.
He just seems like a cool dude to be around.
Yeah. You want to talk real quick about the, this is a little digression, you know, this.
Top performers for the week.
Yeah, one thing I love about social media is the access to see.
Stuff you normally wouldn't.
Correct. And you know, tell me what you got.
So we have the first performer of the week is the Cal football equipment guy who, in the celebration, saw someone try to jank.
So they won a game.
Won a game, came back and beat Stanford. Huge rivalry.
Everyone's storming on the field.
And then this guy sees out of the corner of his eye some dude trying to jack a helmet, some fan. And he goes on full sprint mode across the whole field and tackles the guy. Tackles the guy and gets the helmet back. Now, the guy just disappears into the crowd or whatever. But it's the video that's the best part.
Right.
And he zeroes in on this guy. I mean, it almost looks like those, you know, the drone footage from war times.
Right, the laser-focused strike from the sky.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they played it for the whole team. And they just went absolutely bonkers, which is an awesome moment. Because I guess this guy was a high school football player and wrestler. So, you know, I'm sure he's a jock.
Yeah.
And he's not good enough to be on an D1 team, but he fits on the team somehow. Well, the dude fits in huge now. I mean, I love that.
And I love when the players who play, like, get excited in the same way. Yeah. I don't know. I love those sort of reaction shots. So the video, you can see it online. It's really cool. What's the other one?
The second one is the kid, the junior high school player, Easton Autry, in Globe Life Park. He's a Texas, University of Texas commit. Junior in high school, hit a 540-foot home run in a powerhouse showcase.
Was it an actual game?
No,
it was a home run
hitting competition. Okay. It's just the same ones you've seen Harper in Tampa.
So
and
he got,
Bryce
little, he got meatballs
guys.
Thrown at him.
But I think he's the furthest so far because they're making a big stink out of
500?
It. It's crazy, right? Think about that. That's a high school junior. Now, he's a big dude. He's a big kid. And you're going to be a baller if you're going to the Texas to play baseball. But he's still a high school junior.
Yeah,
think about what he's going to be doing in 4 years.
That's crazy. 500 and what? What's this?
44 or 45 feet.
That's insane.
The furthest home run in Major League Baseball this past season wasn't over 500. I think it was like 490.
Well, that's
something.
The thing is, it's straight physics, right? Yeah. I mean, there's just like, there's a limitation to how far you can hit a ball without help of either steroids or wind. You know what I mean?
And I don't even know how they calculate that because it hit like some scoreboard, like way jumbo.
So maybe it's not quite as accurate as a landing point, right?
Well, listen, with StatCast and all the other stuff. And,
they should figure it out.
Yeah.
Good
sure
stuff. I hope everyone has an awesome Thanksgiving week. We really appreciate people who listen to the show. It's always fun for us to do. We'll be kicking it into high gear after the Thanksgiving holiday
season
with some guests and obviously as the hot stove heater heats up. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you on the other side. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.